Welcome to the Lesbo and the Bean universe. Lesbo and the Bean. LATB. Lat B. Where mixed martial arts and the UFC get silly. Big silly. Buckle up and move your tray tables to their upright position. And please, somebody shut that baby up. It's time for Lesbo and the Bean.
This episode of Lesbo and the Bean is brought to you by Lather & Co. That's latheringcompany.com for all your bath and body needs.
This is an exclusive for Lesbo and the Bean. Remember to type in LATB, L-A-T-B, 15 for 15% off. Any purchases over $25 will give you free shipping. U.S. domestic for now. Wait till later.
That's a really good deal for Lesbo and the Bean. So once again, that's latheringcompany.com. for all your organic, cruelty-free bath and body needs, and onto the show.
Welcome back. Episode 184. We got a pay-per-view on the way, and what a hell of a pay-per-view. This is definitely the standout of the year so far. We are early in the year, but regardless, this is such a stacked card that amongst many years, whenever you got Jon Jones main event in it, it's a must-watch. And woo, do we have some profile fights. Was a 13 card bout. We just got late breaking news down to 12. Before we get into that, how have you been since we last met, Lesbo?
Good! I'm so excited to get into this card, UFC 235. And I might be the only person on the planet, but I am more excited about the co-main than the main.
I don't think that you're off there.
But I'm a Jon Jones hater.
As well as the lines indicate that should be pretty much a squash match compared to an actual competitive match in the co-main event. But before that, we have so many other fights. The fight that officially just fell off of the pay-per-view was Marlon Chito Vera versus Frankie Sainz. That sucks, because you know how we like to play Chito wherever we can. He was a big favorite anyway, so it was going to be hard to make a good amount of money on there with him, but he would more than likely been our pick. Just a little tip there.
I'd have been like, put him everywhere. Exactly. Put him everywhere.
Exactly. But before that, we have about starting off the pay-per-view, the 12 card bout, we have Pollyanna.
Are we going in it?
Oh, I guess I jumped off the boat too soon. I'm excited.
Holy
we got
12, moly!
We got 12 bouts, and
they're
like
real fights to break down. They're not like two double debuts. We don't got any of that.
None of that. Real That's what I'm saying.
Let's see. Our Miami card was changed to Fort Lauderdale. It's a bummer.
Mega bummer.
It's a mega bummer, and
it loses a little bit of its prestige, does it not?
Yeah, for people that aren't from the United States, Fort Lauderdale,
is it in Michigan?
Is it like south of Palm Springs? Is it in the high desert?
Yeah, like I wouldn't have known unless I lived in Florida. I'm like,
Fort Lauderdale. Well, it's actually where the Americans fended off the British for a really long time. It was one of the biggest forts in the country. Just kidding. Can you imagine? You're like, holy shit, I never even heard of Fort
Lauderdale. I was about to say, did not know about that.
So that happened. I feel like I kind of disrespected GSP's retirement a little bit. I just wanted everyone to know, if he's really retiring, I still think he's like one of the top five best guys ever. I still think he's freaking amazing. I love GSP. I didn't get to see him fight enough, but I've rewatched stuff. All GSP's really done in my lifetime of UFC is beat Michael Bisping. Woo! So I know he's amazing. I'm not an ignorant Ramus, but I still think we probably will see GSP in the octagon again. I got a lot of hate for that.
Got a lot of money on that as well. Yeah. And I don't think that you're wrong at all when George St. Pierre's number one training coach, Faraz Ahabi, came out and said, we might see George in there one more time before it's over.
So I loved Faraz Ahabi's mind.
Just throwing that out there. When he himself, he's like, he retired Thursday. He was back in camp training, or he was teaching classes, GSP, Monday morning. So that's how long of a break he took.
He's like, I can't. I just got to get back to work. I can't. I got to get back to work, Brendan. I'm terrified.
So, with GSP bringing up all of the old legends, we have officially seen that Matt Hughes has a restraining order by his wife that has come out due to domestic abuse allegations. And this is only compounded with Mark Hughes, Matt Hughes' twin brother, identical twin brother, also having a restraining order on Matt Hughes because he lit his tractor on fire. No joke. He doused his gasoline, lit it on fire, and roughed up his son. But what's really come out since then is there's a great article. I believe it's on SureDog. It's floating around there by Mick Somebody. But it talks about Matt's book, and it goes over his life, his biography, and how there's mutilation of animals and how he thinks that's fun. And then multiple sexual assaults where he just kind of brushed off and is like, yeah, she was 13, I was 21, but we eventually got married. We just made out a couple times before. Yeah.
Yeah. What about if Matt and his twin brother are pretending they're the same person? What about if they also are trained and they both were in the UFC pretending they were one guy?
He looks a little different. Oh. I'm an identical twin. I can tell them apart. It's definitely...
Do they look different like you say you and your brother look different? Or do they legitimately look different? They... Like, are they identical as well?
They are identical, but in age, you do grow a little bit. Your life experience does take your face a little bit different places. He's got a couple other scars. Especially Matt Hughes, his face changed a bit more just because of the cuts on his face, where his brother was just a farmer.
And probably testosterone and things of that nature.
Oh, definitely. The interesting thing for me, and I feel like this is a running narrative with, I don't want to jump on the religious ones, but Matt Hughes, when he was on the Tough House, was ultra religious, doing Bible study right after training and the Tough House. Neil Magny, being a veteran, actually came out and was like, man, I'm not here to do that. I'm here to train and fight, and I'm here to rest. I'm not going to go do that. Matt belittled him. Talked a bunch of stuff and regularly preaches how he's been saved and a Christian. And wow, he has some of the darkest shit that I've seen in a long time. I mean, there.
You show me a self-righteous man and I'll show you a pervert or a criminal or a weirdo or an asshole. I just think once people, it's almost like they get addicted to the idea of being on a pedestal above someone else. So if I create this idea of my faith being bigger than yours, like, let's have a faith off. Like, get out of my face with your faith.
Oh, but I've been cleaned of my sins. I've been abolished of my sins. It's that easy, huh? Okay.
Okay, yeah, let me go be a prick tomorrow and then be like, hey, I'm prayed and now it's all good. I almost don't even want anything to do with it. Like, if you're allowed to just be a shitbag and then pray it away and be a shitbag and pray it away and be a shitbag and pray it away, show me the religion that allows that so I know where to steer clear of.
100%.
Like, that's garbage thinking.
100%. So, just, wow.
You know, we always take it to other ways here. It's never an MMA show. It's always
But the legends, because I remember crying a couple pay-per-views ago when they panned to Hughes after that's what I'm saying.
I got touched.
Like, I remember just being like, oh, he's such a legend. He's such a good guy.
Don't make eye contact.
Who's crying? You're crying. No. Why is he showing this?
Pussy. That's a pussy. You're a pussy. So,
interesting how it just changes. And all I gotta say is I can relate to Mark Hughes' twin brother because I almost had to get a restraining order over evil twin. Trying to get up all of my free picks. Trying to be all about my free picks. Unfortunately, I came to terms where everybody deserved my free picks, so he is a part of everybody.
Yeah.
Evil twin, unfortunately, he lucked out there.
You were like, well, you have to follow me on Twitter at Zoltanite.
So, evil twin, definitely trying to get in all of this.
This is my running shop of the day. Shout out to evil twin. He shouts out to fucking everything when I watch Big Brown.
That is funny. Any other MMA-verse stuff we want to get into before
Tony
this heavy part?
Tony turning down the fight with Max officially, and Max taking it with Dustin, and we've talked about it's like not as exciting, but still a great fight. And I expressed to you, and this is when we started the show, you were like, let's talk about it on air.
True.
You guys, I'm bummed out, but I really feel like Tony is going to outbid the rest of his career. He is not a young man. He's got to be 38, 37?
I thought it was 36, 37.
He can't be doing that. The UFC, I don't know what the whole extra thing. We know pay-per-view, a championship, and some guys just want it for their legacy. Like, they've been working their whole career to one day be a champion. Even down to, like, I'll make 145 if I'm going to fight Max. Why am I going to fight Max for... And you got to understand Tony different than everybody else. Another interim belt. Another interim belt.
Totally.
And there has to be some culpability of the wire that Tony tripped on during a UFC event. Like, it's a UFC event. It's not like he tripped running on Venice Beach.
Right, or kicking a steel bar.
Yeah. Maybe.
So, I totally agree. He's really putting himself in a tough spot, especially in a division that has been very stagnant, even though it is the most full division of them all. Habib's out for a year. That's why they have to do this garbage interim bull crappy.
And you know what? From fight date to when Khabib can fight again is a strip. You can't stick up for Khabib now. We either have the year rule or we don't. It's a strip. The same
fools
yelling about McGregor being stripped are the same assholes sticking up for Khabib not being stripped. They both should be stripped. Let's move on with the division, especially 155. What, we're going to age out Dustin Poirier, Tony Ferguson. We're moving up Max Holloway into a division. We still don't have a fight for Nate Diaz. Now we have Cowboy coming down from 170 to take the only fight everyone wants. Khabib sitting on the side. Sidelines because the only fight he took is still a 155er. The best 155er he beat is still a 155er most people don't accept as their champion.
And you have Gillespie, Barbosa, Dariush, Hernandez, tons
the list
of
Gaethje, like the list
so
of Kevin Lee.
Contenders.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Unreal. That's where I'm saying it is. We need to keep it moving.
Strip that belt. In my opinion, you strip the belt if we're going to be completely fair. You strip the belt and you give Tony Ferguson versus Dustin Poirier a shot at the belt for the real belt. Like, it's an uncontested real belt. Tony, just because I believe that Dustin Poirier has worked himself up. I sometimes am a Dustin hater. I think Tony's worked his way up. The guy's on, like, the longest winning fight streak and against Murderer's Row.
100%.
You let those guys fight for it. If you want to put Max in there, you put... Fine. If I don't give a shit. If Connor wants to fight Cowboy, cool. But really, the real fight should be Max versus Connor. But whatever. How about Max versus Nate? Let him step in against the number 10 type guy so he's not walking in there against the top three guys. It's still a money fight for him. It's still one for his legacy. Let Max fight Nate. Let Dustin fight. Max can fight Nate for an interim. Totally. I don't really give a shit. But guess what? If they fight for the real belt, you can get rid of this interim nonsense. This makes me heated because I really am like, I just need to see... Tony in there again. And I don't like Khabib's whole thing with Tony. Like, I lost my shot 3 times and I had to work my way back to the top. No, you didn't. No, you didn't. You lost your shot 3 times. One was because you didn't make your weight right. And then the other, you had to fight Michael Johnson off other fights. That wasn't your shot. So when you finally got your shot, you got to fight Aya Quinta for the belt. That was your shot. I think it would be more legitimate, Dustin Poirier versus Ferguson, in my opinion, for the belt. And everyone's like, well, what about Connor? What about Connor? What about Connor, the guy who took 2 years off and fought Floyd Mayweather? Whatever you feel good about. I'm irritated. Let's talk about 235. Sorry.
235, you know I'm a Tony lover. You know what we're here to do.
You just let me
break
go
it
up on
the
rail.
Down. Let him keep on going. Get it out. Get it out. But again, we got a 12-card bout. Coming out of Vegas? This is where he's going to be held, all the big pay-per-views?
New Vegas.
Really?
New Vegas. Yeah, it's full fallout.
Wow.
It's a fallout. I think when Usman and Woodley meet, that's fallout.
It's good. It's when... Ooh, that was a rough joke I was about to make. I'm going to keep it back.
What were you
going to... I was going to go with Dark Matter against Dark Matter and Exploding Universe.
You have to go get a Nuka-Cola.
Exactly.
Fallout. That's my favorite video game.
That's a great one. Definitely. So,
second favorite after Tony Hawk Pro Skater. Go on.
We start off the night at 115 pounds with a strawweight bout, Pollyanna Viena versus Hannah Cyphers. Both of these ladies have come in the UFC or have previous fights in the UFC. Cyphers losing her debut, being 8-3 to Macy Barber. Doesn't look that bad all of a sudden when Macy really looks like a top contender in there. Macy's the one you were profiling. Styling about young 20-year-old, but Cyphers really keeps it striking. More of a Muay Thai striker on the ground. She's really limited. You saw Barber really expose that. Everybody can really see that. She doesn't have a good takedown defense, and she just kind of looks lost on the ground. She has good ground and pound, but will leave her arm in for a submission, so we don't really want to see Cypher's on the ground at all. Everybody sees that happening. Paula Viana has won a fight in the UFC, being 10-2 against Stevenson's wife, but she has lost a bout as well to JJ Aldridge. Aldridge being the underdog there here at Lat B. We said the veteran was going to come through for a reason. Viana still moving her skills up, but she's also a Muay Thai striker, more classically trained. I would say if you put both of these ladies together, Viana by far has way better striking and power than Cypher is. And on the ground, I can't remember her belt right now, but I do believe she has some accolades in actual Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, where Cypher's is just kind of a wrestler with submissions and not even submissions. So anywhere this really goes, I'd see Viana winning it. That's why she's a minus 350 favorite, one of the biggest favorites of the night, and rightly so. It is the first fight of the night. It's going to be a stay away, because if there's a finish, it's Viana. It's a stay away all the way for Cypher's. I got decision. I might turn that into a finish before weigh-ins. Stick around for that. What do you think goes down?
I agree with you. I think you stay away from this fight. And it's actually a fight in the right place on the card for a change. This should be the first fight of the night if you're going to have anything. Viana, I have her to win by submission. I could see her getting a nasty, bloody elbow and right in the nose and being put out too. But I think, or both ladies could go to a boring decision after they run out of gas in 7 minutes of the fight. So I
totally see that.
Have Viana submission round three, but I am going to put this nowhere.
For Viana, it is going to be 9,200 on DraftKings against 7,000 for Cyphers. Are you going to have any exposure at all to Viana?
No.
I agree with that as well. It's going to be tough for her to get up past that 100 mark, 90 point mark. So I think there's a steer clear away. Then we had Vera fall out with Sainz. Then we move on to the second fight of the night at 135 pounds, bantamweight for the ladies. We have returning Macy Chiesan being perfect 3-0. Winning the Ultimate Fighter show and one of the funner fights we've seen in a while, finishing her longtime friend in Pani Kanzada. She's coming in against a 5-2 fighter in Gina Mazzani. Gina Mazzani has losses to Sarah McMahon in there. She also has beat Wang Yu in a decision, but as of late, over 8 months ago, she lost to Lena Landsberg in a decision, where Landsberg was actually a huge favorite there. Due to Mazzani's low fight IQ, Mazzani really drags the takedown. She usually wants to get the fight to the ground to work on her ground and pound. But when Mazzani tries to get you there, she uses very bad shots and takedowns. And even in her last fight, the tape I was watching, she was literally pulling the woman on top of her instead of to the side and around, which means she's going to land on top. And all of a sudden, you gave up a position, a takedown even. And in Chiesan, we've seen tons of power, mainly a submission artist on the ground. She's long. She's a heavy favorite for a reason. All the way around, she's leaps and bounds better. She's an automatic title contender. I just feel like they're trying to give her a bit more of a record, 3-0. It's just hard to stick her in against the champ regardless in there. You got to get her maybe at that 8 or 9-0 record before she contends in the weak division. But automatic contender, there's a reason she's a minus 400 favorite. I think actually Chiesan finishes this. And I'm going to say it's in the first or second. And I'm just mixed up whether it's knockout or submission, because Chiesan throws punches down the middle and Mazzani does not move her head. She just sticks her arms out and tries to grab you. And on the ground, that's where Chiesan made her living initially, is on the ground. So I think they're feeding her a win here.
Do you feel like Chiesan's very similar to Anthony Smith? Like, their fighting styles are very, like, ground eccentric, but then people with tons of power and great builds for their divisions. Like, perfect.
I don't know if I would say Anthony Smith as much, because he's a little more explosive, obviously.
I just feel like they move forward kind of similar. I was going to say, like, her most dangerous spot, in my opinion, is something that she's really starting to exploit as a female fighter, is something that he really does well. at 205 is I think they're both super good at pulling down somebody's head into their knees, pulling down somebody's body into their knees. They're both super dangerous, and they're making their elbows and knees just as dangerous. Almost like the same way that Dominic Cruz has taken his takedown to make it a strike, I think, or TJ Dillashaw makes his takedown a strike. I feel like they, and not that other people don't strike with their elbows and knees, it's just so fast when they do it, and it's just so fluid. I feel like we might have hated on Macy the first time around. She went in there and proved herself to me last fight. She likes to cut her hair like Lesbo in the Bean, which is really important here if we're going to vote for a lesbian fighter.
How do you know she's lesbian? I'm pretty sure she's a lesbian.
I got gaydar, like...
boom, boom, boom. Mazzani, actually Tim Elliott's partner, whatever that means. But I know I saw Elliott, who was a 25er, just posting about her getting it done in there. And I like Elliott as a fighter. I don't know about a persona so much. But
Tim, little Tim.
Little Tim Elliott.
Little Tim.
How do you feel?
Yeah, I have Kiesan. I think she's going to pull her somewhere. I think she's going to get a good strike to the body. I could see a submission coming off of that if Mazzani doesn't but I could just see her turtling up and then just taking strikes until the ref is finished. I like the finish here for Kiesan. I think she's one they can build up good, but I don't want to go too heavy on this because right. I still want to stick with what I know. And I don't know that much about her yet. This is only her second fight for me.
I would definitely say Mazzani is a step down from her last opponent, who was the other contender in there. With this as well, Kiesan is 9,400 against 6,800 for Mazzani. This is the second most expensive fighter of the night. The only other more heavily priced fighter is the champion, John Jones. But out of the two, right now I'm going to say I like Kiesan way more for the finish. Way more. I feel like she easily covers that.
Than John Jones?
Yes, even though he's a way bigger favorite. There's less danger in Kiesan.
Not only do I agree with that, I also think she's not just going to get finish points. She lays out a lot of strikes and she's dangerous everywhere.
Yep.
You know what? You could even compare her style to a John Jones.
John Jones!
You could compare her. I think Anthony Smith is a lot more aggressive version of John Jones, and he's more Brazilian jiu-jitsu eccentric than the wrestling. But I think Kiesan could be like, if they had if they trained a little lesbian together, it could be Kiesan.
She's going to be on the winning lineups on DraftKings is kind of what I'm just thinking. Even for 9-4, which is tough to say, I like that finish ability. We're both agreeing that a finish is coming for Chiesan in that. But
do you think she's going to be okay fighting at 135? No problem?
No problem.
Then it's
no issue.
Then she's even more dangerous.
Yep. Also be looking out for after weigh-ins, because we do like to watch all the fight week stuff moving up, and they've already started releasing the embeds, the I Am the Babe, Anatomy of a Fighter, all that good stuff. Always breaking down the tape. Then we move on to 185 pounds, where we have Charles Byrd versus Edmund Sabazian. The 21-year-old Glendale fighter is going to have Edmund Tavourian in there. You know how we like the Ed Movement against Charles Byrd's 10-5 record. The perfect 8-0 21-year-old definitely showed us that he is well-rounded. Initially, we thought he was generally a striker on a low scene, who was just not tested by a wrestler, and Stewart actually came in and lost the split decision, and it was mainly due to those wrestling advantages that Edmund showed in that second and third round, showing he had a gas tank and was able to keep it on the ground when he needed to. Landed 8 takedowns over Stewart, the dentist, but actually lost about a 20-25 significant strike differential. Obviously, the position for Edmund won him that fight, but Stewart is that middling, bordering gatekeeper fighter. Byrd, everything can be said as well for that, but the difference between Charles Byrd and Stewart is the lack of power in the strikes for Byrd, and to try to get it to the ground, Charles Byrd is a submission artist. He is a submission guy with all of that black explosive that we talk about. He'll land that kick or punch, but he doesn't really feel comfortable striking. He has all of the ability to throw the craziest shit you ever seen, but it just doesn't fluidly come for him. He definitely feels better on the ground. And now that we've seen this young fighter be able to have enough fight IQ to
make this fight where he wants to, this is going to be a tricky guy to pick from here on out, because he can keep this standing and beat Charles Byrd standing. Always has to be careful about the power, but if Stewart couldn't get him out of there, I don't think Byrd has better striking ability. And I feel like Tavarian's takedown defense showed as well, even though the dentist didn't throw too much at him. This is a really, really close one. I feel like it could go coin flip at any single moment. I am siding with Edmund here, but I could flip to Byrd. I think I'm going to end up staying away because I feel like this goes to decision. They both kind of cancel each other out and are just going to have a striking contested bout. I'm going to probably wait for other spots because I am seeing a decision here as far as my DraftKings, but I'm going to side with Sabarian decision right now. Who do you have in this fight?
Shabazzian. What a weird... Yeah, Edmund. I like just... Charles Byrd, the one question I wanted to bring to the show is for you is, how are his takedowns? How does he shoot in? Because I really love Shabazzian, his takedown defense. Yep. And so if Charles Byrd comes in garbage and maybe only hot for that first 2 minutes, and then when you said Black Explosive about him, that made me even more nervous because I know that Edmund's cardio is going to outwork him. So I was going to ask you, how are his takedowns?
His takedowns are good for the first round. And then it turns into, holy shit, my arms are gassing. My level changes are really slow and telegraphed. And we've seen this kid be tired because he was dead tired in there against a veteran, who more of a veteran than Charles Byrd. And he did really, really well. Minus 135 favorite, Edmund, against the plus 105 near even.
Bird. I'm going to probably stay away from this fight. When you get up to the 185, especially for a guy that's 35 years old to a 21-year-old, I just don't like this for Charles Byrd here. I think the Lions should be even heavier favorited to Edmund, but I think the reason they're not is because Edmund's still so new. I don't know if Charles Byrd's UFC caliber necessarily. They just needed more guys in the 185 to start stacking up these youngsters with some wins. So I'm going to think this is a setup, but I'm going to stay far, far away from it. I got Edmund KO round three.
So we have Edmund at 8,200 on DraftKings against Byrd's 8,000 even. This is a coin flip as far as DraftKings. I am siding with Edmund there at 8-2. I don't know if I see the value if anyone saw the value in the last fight, because he never really showed his wrestling credentials, but 8 takedowns really inflates your DraftKings score, which he averaged 90 points on that last, on his first debut. I don't think he's going to shoot 8 times on Byrd, because again, Byrd wants to get this to the ground. Yeah. So again, stay away from this one. There's going to be other spots.
That's good advice.
Moving on to 170 pounds, we have perennial longest tenured fighter ever off of season one, Diego the Lion Sanchez, against Mickey Gall. Mickey is definitely called every single one of his shots in there, being 5-1. He only has a loss to Rude Boy Randy Brown, and that fight over a year ago really showed some huge holes in Mickey Gall's game, and that's a good counter wrestler. Against Sullivan 5 months ago, Mickey Gall was by far just a younger, more explosive fighter. We didn't really get to see much because Sylvain George in there is just a shot fighter as well. So again, it's Mickey Gall just knowing the spots, and he, like everybody else, said, hey, Diego Sanchez at 155, I'll fight you too. And Diego said, yeah, okay, what do you say? Where's the snake? And all of a sudden, he's going to get in the cage in there this coming up week. I love Diego Sanchez, love the Mexican heart, love everything, but he has got to take a step away. You can hear the slur in his speech, likes to get in brawls in there. He showed us, though, coming off of a win to Craig White, who's super low caliber, in there, that he can still grind out a decision and out-wrestle-fuck the living shit out of anybody. Diego Sanchez has always had his wrestling in his back pocket and fell into that striking battle and thought he was a striker. Now his chin can't keep up with it, and it looked like he turned back into that wrestler, at least for that last fight. Against Gall, who's really not a striker and actually likes to get it to the ground as much as possible, Sanchez could really hold his own here, and not in the fact that Gall's going to submit him, but Diego Sanchez isn't just going to give up. Diego Sanchez has never been submitted, and he's been in there against BJ Penn and against tons of other fighters that are as high, if not higher caliber than Mickey Gall. A lot of people are saying that Diego might have an advantage striking. I just can't end that chin at all. That regardless of who he decides to strike with, I'm going to bet against. But I do think that Diego Sanchez, we don't have to worry about the submission prop as well. But this is going to be like that Nick Lentz, Greg Maynard fight where Mickey Gall's going to go in there and throw as hard as he wants because technique can go out the door. If you clip Diego Sanchez with anything, he's going to get rocked and then you can finish it up with a submission. I think it is a finish, round number one or two. And this is a complete fade. This is not me hyping out on Mickey Gall.
Well, you know what? You're going to be the only one. I am actually over these kind of fights for Mickey Gall. I agree. I think that he is somebody who is... he's going to be like the poor man's version of T-City. And he is going to lose his spot to Cron Gracie. Like, as far as, like, being the submission guys, these one-trick pony kind of guys. Right. Mickey Gall, to me, just isn't picking the right fights. Once he picked the Randy Brown fight, and then he made it to decision with Randy Brown, that was a big deal for me. Like, Sage Northcutt, when he took Sage, I'm not even sure he could beat Sage again if they fought.
55er. By the way,
yeah, like even if they like fought. So I like that the Randy Brown, that he made it to decision with Randy Brown, because I really dig Randy Brown. But it's just the kid is almost calling out every, like, yeah, of course you, no, it's not of course. He's almost calling out guys he knows he can beat handedly, where a lot of other guys want to test themselves against the best guys in the world. I think there's two kinds of mentality to this sport. And so I think a lot of Johnny come latelys. And so I think, like, DraftKings wise and even parlay makers, this is just another fight to stack on the side of making Mickey Gall a hype train. And all of us little wise guys can know that it ain't a hype train. Yeah, he's going to win this fight. I agree with you. He's probably just going to win by decision. People are going to put him everywhere and he's not going to be worth a lot of points because he's not going to stay on the feet a long time. There isn't going to be a lot of transitions. He's just going to get him down and hold him there. They might even get stood up a couple times mm-hmm. out of no movement. I don't think he's a striker either. I don't think he's coming around. I just haven't seen his skill set step up to the caliber of all these other guys we see that came in around the 24 years of age. I think Sage Northcutt's grown more as a fighter than Mickey Gall.
Wow,
and
I
used to be a Mickey Gall fan over Sage. So I can't even say, like you're saying, what's Mickey Gall going to show me against Diego Sanchez that's going to make me feel great?
Exactly. Like, but I like what you're saying, because next fight out, when Mickey Gall steamed up against a real fighter, I'm going to be putting some money on the underdog.
Yeah, I think I can even picture the fighters that they're going to put him against that I'm going to be like, yeah, I'll take the guy that everyone's voting against because they just think, who's that beast that just fought?
Barbarina.
Brian Barbarina. Didn't Barbarina already school? No, he schooled Northcutt.
Northcutt as well.
That's a
but
great
But Barbarina
fight.
Versus Gall?
Yeah.
I got Barbarina all day.
And
all
other people are going to think, oh, Barbarina don't want to go to... He's going to use the wrestling in reverse, never going to go to the ground. And then he's going to pick him apart on the feet. And Gall's not going to be able to hurt him anywhere because we just saw what kind of damage he could take. So Mickey Gall, I have him to win this fight. I'm going to stay away from this because I think it's going to be BS points. And Diego Sanchez, I don't see him getting finished in there. Everybody else is going to see him getting finished. So when you see these lines start to go haywire, maybe you put a little money. Maybe homeboy can eke out a decision because I don't see him getting submitted. So if you take away the danger of him, his opponent's most dangerous thing is submission, maybe he's a smart enough fighter like his last fight, like you're saying, oh, we saw Diego's wrestling again. What happens if he uses that and just picks him apart? I was just going to look down. If he has that Jackson Wink game plan. Stay on the outside, pick him apart, stay on the outside, pick him apart, use your wrestling when you need to.
With this bout, Mickey Gall is 9,100 on DraftKings against Diego Sanchez, 7,100. Do you feel like you're going to play Sanchez anywhere?
Oh my gosh. Is this an all wink, no wink? If you're going to go John Jones, are you going to say Diego's going to set up the night for the all wink, no wink? I don't know. I'm a little scared. You're going to have to follow me at Week 10, baby, to see how I feel about it. But right now I have Gall decision. But
that is scary.
I actually loved the way Diego looked last fight. But like you were saying, super low caliber guy.
Super low caliber guy in there that he's fighting. At 9,100, I'm going to speckle Gall in there. I'm even going to throw some Diego Sanchez because, as we were saying last week, maybe you hold off on those DraftKings lines. This is the week to be playing DraftKings.
Agree.
They got cards everywhere. They got big money, little money, medium money.
I've booked cards like a few weeks. Every time I had a big win.
Yep.
Like the second they opened these, I think it was a little before last
week. Yeah, you reserve a spot.
Yeah, they had like, you know, I'm reserving cards and playing bigger than I normally play.
Oh, yeah. This is the type of card to do that. Definitely, there's money to be made everywhere. A lot of good prop lines, especially when we see the way that these finishes may happen if you're reading between the lines. Interesting, but the submission, speaking don't of, make that
Did you see Nina Arsenoff? She tweeted out that she has fight news coming soon. Any guesses on who it might be?
Interesting. I did not see that post, but I did like that there was some conversation talking about Asnaroff versus Tatiana Suarez. Suarez was calling her out on the local MMA media. She was saying, I don't want to fight Cavillo because she's 12th. I'm 4th or 3rd. Nina is 3rd or 4th, the only person above her. Yeah, that might be it right there.
Oh my gosh, could they be fighting? Are they trying to sneak? Now, do you think Nina, if she fights Tatiana, do they sneak her and Amanda and put them both on a Brazilian card together? So that, or do they give us Nina Tatiana at UFC 4 Lauderdale? Which will probably still be hashtag UFC Miami because they already made the posters.
They already paid for the posters.
Yeah, that's the exact same thing, like UFC 233.
Miami, kind of.
Yeah. I mean, I think if Nina can be Amanda at UFC 233, she could totally handle Tatiana. No? Nothing? No.
You caught me mid-drink. Yes, I totally agree. She's definitely going to have her hands full, though. That is a really stinky fight. I love it in Fort Lauderdale. You know how I like me.
We're going to see. That could be a co-main, in my opinion. That's a co-main fight, and that's a lot. That would get a lot of hate, but if you're a hardcore, you know how good that fucking fight is. Tatiana Suarez, Nina Asnaroff, that's a co-main UFC Miami.
Hopefully, the Lioness herself can grace us with a photo because we know she's going to be in the house.
And the main event being Costa versus Yoel, that would be unbelievable.
Take protection, ladies and gentlemen.
And that would be a fight of the year, Costa Yoel. I don't even think it's going to be a fight of the year. In my opinion, Yoel starches that fight, but... This next fight we're about to break down, this could be a fight of the year.
This definitely could be at 135 pounds. We have Alejandro Perez versus Cody Stamann. Stamann coming back in at a 17-2 record off of his first loss in the UFC against Aljamain Sterling 5 months ago due to that Suliyev stretch. I was worried about the knee. Stamann's been posting a lot of training footage. His knee's good. He didn't suffer any long-time damage. I don't even think he had to get any surgery on it. It was just more of a strain than anything, which is looking good for us. Against Perez, who is 21-6, perennial, and I'm going to take this line from, I can't remember who off the top of my head, but the epitome of a weasel fighter, the epitome of a split decision winner.
Jack Slack.
It wasn't Jack Slack, I want to say.
I like that weasel fighter.
It is.
Are you talking about Cody Stamann?
No, I'm talking about Alejandro Perez is a weasel of a fighter. He ekes out split decisions more than any other fighter.
Wouldn't you say the same as Cody Stamann? Look at his record. Split decision by Brian Caraway, split decision Tom Duquesnoy, decision Terry and Ware, which was super close, and then KO, I don't even know who Zach Church is. And then the Aljamain Sterling was like definitive, but the craziest submission.
Totally agree. But in that fight, Sterling was definitely running away with that fight. More than any other fight.
Wasn't Aljamain Sterling my submission of the year and Cody Stamann was your submission of the year?
No. I had Aljamain Sterling over Cody and you had Zabit over Damon Brown. Yeah. So, both of the same night, fights fairly close to each other.
All blended together. I'm like, but we dig Cody Stamann, right?
Oh, for sure. Definitely a fan of Stamann's. He is a big favorite here at minus 175 against Perez's plus 140.
Here's a little fact, and I could be wrong, but I think Dearborn, Michigan is the highest per capita Muslim Americans in the country. And I might be wrong. But it was when I went to college in Michigan.
Is that where Stamann's out of?
Yeah.
So he's fighting for his life every day is what you're telling me? What's going
on?
wasn't saying that at all. Just a Dearborn fact.
Just a good little Dearborn fact. But he's definitely going to have to worry about the Mexican fighter in there. Turbo himself, really, he makes close decisions because he keeps fights where he wants to and he controls the pace. He has better takedown defense than you would think. And on the ground, he's serviceable. Perez isn't a big submission threat at all whatsoever, but he has fundamentally solid wrestling with a good gas tank and higher output than you would think with his strikes. He just doesn't have knockout power, so a lot of people don't remember him in there. But the fight IQ for Perez is up there, and it's not for all the best reasons. It's for grabbing the fence, grabbing the shorts, poking the eyes. But you know, here at Lab B, we like motherfuckers who know how to win. And Alejandro Perez is one of those motherfuckers.
That was a lot of another call from last week. I'm glad you're saying it real fast, that they actually took a point immediately from a fence grab.
You said that, the Black Iguana.
We were saying that. It was just good call after good call after good call. But yeah, maybe we're going to see more of that if he decides to do something like that. You can't lose a point like that to Cody Stamann.
I would hope so, but we're in Vegas and they were in Prague. Different commissions.
New Vegas.
Where is this officially? I believe it.
Las Vegas.
Yeah, okay, I'm just like, all right.
No, you played Fallout, though, the new Vegas one, Fallout 4.
Yeah.
You remember how we were going to be in Vegas last time they moved the whole card to California?
True.
And there's probably been a Vegas card in there before, but I don't think there has been. I might be totally crazy.
Oh, yeah.
But it's just been a long time since we've been in Vegas, and with everything going on with the Khabib, they just gave Dylan Danis a $7,700 fine.
Khabib and Connor was in Vegas.
Khabib, Connor. Yeah. But I'm just, like, they're just so shitty there now. Yeah. And it's just, we've all known their mob run and stuff. And no one likes Dylan Danis. But should he have been charged and fined?
He was a victim.
Exactly. It would be saying, like, if you and I were ringside and we were Connor fans and we were, like, booing Khabib and he jumped out on us, what, we were going to get fined? Yep. We're just two asshole people. True. That's all he's Dylan
the professional.
Was.
He should be the professional.
Yeah, and Dylan wasn't even at the fight promotion that was... He doesn't even work for the promotion. I think totally it's kind of bullshit. Agree. As much as I can't stand him, I'm like, what did he... And $7,700. If anything...
That's half a year's pay.
I would pay $7,700 for them to mention Lesbo and the Bean with Khabib and Connor.
True.
Like, Dylan's paying to have his name mentioned with these two elite guys, and he's won one professional fight.
If we know anything about Connor, with all of the people he's dealt with, he's paid every single one of his guys bills. As far everyone who's ever been in trouble with him, they don't have to worry about legal fees. Connor takes care of his own, as much as we want to hate on him or love him, depending on where you stand. So, back to the 135ers, though. With this close split decision fight, I feel like it's going to be a split decision. It's a coin flip of a fight, and the fact that a minus 175 Stamann, the line's off. This should be a near even fight, and a lot of people are giving Stamann the wrestling advantage here, but Stamann does slow down in that late second round, even third round, where we've seen Turbo hold on steadily there. I do think the fight IQ, which in every fight it plays, but I do think Perez knows how to eke out or land that last takedown in the last minutes of the fight. He is underappreciated for the fight IQ or the cheating, whatever you want to call it, because he's thinking in there when other guys are trying to hold on, he's trying to win. Give me the underdog. Perez, dirty ass motherfucking split. Let's go. Who do you got, Lesbo?
Oh, boy. I really love Cody Stamann, and I like Cody Stamann going forward. And he really set off my bells when he got the split decision with Brian Caraway because of Brian Caraway's name. Looking back at that fight, that wasn't the Brian Caraway I was used to seeing, who used to be the split decision king.
True.
He's kind of taken a step back. He seems a little rusty. I don't know what's going on. But and then Tom Dukinwa. I like Tom Dukinwa. But he still isn't of the caliber of the guys that I, in my opinion, Alejandro Perez has gone with. I've bet with Perez 4 times of his last 4 times, and he hasn't steered me wrong yet. I think he has the better cardio. I think he's sneaky. I think he's going to negate a lot of the takedowns. I think this is going to go 1-1 and go right down to the final minutes of the fight. And I think everything's going to matter. I think Alejandro Perez can lay more damage so that if everything lies even here, he's going to have the more brutal shot. Neither of the guys I see as a knockout artist. I think both I think it's good old-fashioned Mexican wrestling versus good old-fashioned United States wrestling. This might be a boring fight to the not hardcore. So if you have your friends there that aren't normally watching UFC fights, maybe this is where you send them to go get beer or pizza.
This is not a bad idea.
This is a hardcore fight only, and it's going to be super tricky, super technical. Inches are going to matter. Everything's going to matter. If any point's taken for any reason, which you don't seem to worry about.
Not in Vegas.
I actually have Perez eking out the decision as well because I think it's cardio only. And so if it goes down to the last minute of the last round, who do I think is going to have more energy there? I think it's going to be Alejandro. So I'm going to go with the Mexican fighter here. And I think the lines are off as well. This should be a pick'em fight. Let's get the underdog.
Let's get some free money here at Les Bon and the Bean. $8,600 for Stamen on DraftKings against $7,600 for Perez. I'm not going to expose myself to Stamen at all on DraftKings here because I do see that decision. And for 7-6, I need some cheap guys. You better believe Perez is going to be on a couple of those. He does average only about 60 points, but for that cheap of a price, he especially with a win, he'll get over that 70, 80 points and be worth it. In there, that's definitely.
I think he's a good guy that even on a split decision loss for that price, he'll comfort your cards enough that if you pick everything else good with finishers, you're still gonna end up in the money. He might not be a one that neither of these guys is on the first card, like your top card of the night, but it's like both of them are kind of playing safe. I agree with you. Stamen's not playing safe.
Agreed. Stamen, you're not gonna get your money back, or it's gonna be very hard unless he gets a finish in there. So you got to be playing Perez if you're playing either side of that fight as far as DraftKings is concerned. Then we move on to the 205-pounders where we have Misha Shurkunov versus Johnny Walker.
Which this fight could be the co-main of any ESPN fight night.
This could be the main event of any ESPN fight night. Not enough name value. I think Johnny Walker is a comet right now. Coming in short notice.
I think he's hot. You can't, in my opinion, you can't fight your third fight in the UFC and be in the main. But then it's like, oh, never mind. We're seeing that happen all the time these days. I think we just saw it last week.
Definitely.
Because you want to say Anthony Smith and say, this guy just shot out of nowhere and now he's at the main. But I think he has more fights professionally than any other fighter in the UFC.
Pretty much.
44 fights?
Yeah, with 30 amateur fights. Who has 30 amateur fights?
That's 74 real fights.
Yeah. It's unbelievable. With this 205-pound bout, we have a submission artist versus striker. I mean, this is Johnny Walker, who I've been trying to fade since he got in because the tape I saw on him back on the day was a young man who hadn't grown into his body. The juice is loose in Brazil, and he might be off of the cycle, but he's retained a lot of those benefits. He's definitely filled out all over, and striking is where Walker likes to make his money. Haven't seen much of a ground game, and against Shurkunov, that's something you gotta worry about. He's the guy who popped Nikolaou's jaw out of its socket, and we heard it on air. Absolutely brutal. Shurkunov makes his money getting this fight to the ground. He usually likes to push you up against the fence, drag you down, and crawl up your body. The thing with Shurkunov that we've seen being 14-4 is he's coming off of a win to Pat Cummings where he submitted him, triangle choke. Cummings.
Shurkunov looks like a giant GSP.
I can totally see that. Totally. He's all sorts of muscled out, but we've seen it in his two losses against, was it Olenek? Or what was it? Fucking No Time in there? Or Cousin? And he also lost another knockout loss in there. But
it was Demir and Teixeira.
Teixeira as well was the other one. With Shurkunov, it's his chin. Especially that Olenek fight where he did exactly what he wanted to with Olenek. He pushed him up against the fence and he threw an inside clinch uppercut that sent Shurkunov to the ground. And what we've seen from Johnny Walker is inside short shots. Ask Khalil Roundtree and Justin Ledet. Roundtree more especially. I just feel like Shurkunov is going to do what he usually does in fights, where he shoots an outside single, like DC, pushes you up against the fence, drags you down, and then starts to work. But these guys that are hitting him on the inside with even half-powered punches, his chin is just never been the strongest. I don't know why. I don't know his training regimen. Just what I've seen. He gets hurt more than most fighters do in little scrambles. And he's a front runner. If he doesn't get his momentum going, he gets put light out. And Walker throws that inside elbow he did against Roundtree. He can do that again, even with his back to the fence and hurt Shurkinov. Even if that happens two or three times. This is just a really close fight for me. Shurkinov has the clear advantage on the ground. Should be able to get him down there. But his chin is so tentative and Walker has so much power from every angle. And still just willing to try stuff. I feel like this is that Diego Sanchez, Mickey Gall. Where Walker doesn't have to worry about what he throws. Even with that Ledette, he kind of flicked out the spinning back fist. And he just has power. He naturally has power. And Ledette went stiff all of a sudden. And I feel like it happens here again. I don't think it's a technical strike that lands. I just think it's a strike that lands. And Shurkinov goes out. I got Walker TKO round number one. But I'm not that confident in it. Because we haven't seen Walker's ground game yet. I've been, though, betting against Walker his last two fights. And look at where that's got me. So, who do you have here and why?
I know. Now I have to open and see how I've gone with Walker. Oh, I had Khalil Roundtree against him.
I switched your mind on that because I was like, this kid gets knocked out in there and he's a kid. He's a kid. He ain't a kid anymore. This
I had Johnny Walker out on air but switched it before him. Yeah. But I had Khalil. And then the next time I had him KO round one and that's exactly what happened. I agree. We haven't seen his ground game tested. But you know what tests your ground game? Being in Brazil. Like, just yep. Being a Brazilian, you probably have a pretty decent ground game. Like, I know it's a lot. I really like Shurkinov still. I still think he's a gatekeeper for a lot of guys coming forward. There's just something about Johnny Walker that's actually the thing I'm going to give Anthony Smith. I just keep having to say these good things about Anthony Smith, and maybe it's to egg on this fight a little bit and make myself a little hyped for it. Like, what do you do when you're going up against perfection? But Johnny Walker has this build with his body that looks so natural in the 205, the same way as Anthony Smith, where yeah. You can easily see both guys walk into the heavyweight division and clean out it. The division.
Agreed.
So it's like watching him in the 205. Both guys, in my opinion, even their builds, are the most dangerous to John Jones. I don't see Anthony Smith having a weak chin, and I see him having forward pressure. This is kind of what I see with Johnny Walker. I just think it's a crazy amount of pressure, a super good chin. I don't think we're going to see him go on the ground at all. He's such a long guy that his sprawl goes out so wide that the second Shurkinov has to try to get in the inside, we have killer elbows, killer inside uppercuts. I just don't see him getting there. I think this is another knockout round one for Johnny Walker. It's almost a setup fight. I think he asked for it.
Yes. Well, yes. He's short notice coming in on like 3 weeks.
And I just think it's going to be devastating, but it's the perfect card to put him on. For any people, I do think John Jones has his own group of fans that he's always guaranteed an 800K pay-per-view buy. This is the perfect guy because you know who's going to be the biggest threat to John Jones in the next 600 days? Johnny Walker. It's unbelievable. So I got Walker KO round one. I just think that this is another guy he has to get through. That's it.
So Latby agrees here. TKO round number one, whatever that means for you fans. Take it with a grain of salt. Take it to the betting lines. Do whatever you want. You're getting it for free. Here at Lap B.
I don't think he put Shurkinov anywhere. I don't see him sneaking out of victory here.
I agree with that. At 7,800 Shurkinov against 8,400, I see the clear standout being Walker, especially with that finish. Not being over 9,000 kind of surprises me. But it's because Shurkinov has an avenue on the ground, potentially. What I see, though, here on DraftKings is a lot of people see what we see, so I think Walker's going to probably be one of the highest owned people of the night at 8-4.
I just want to walk back through Shurkinov's submissions for you. Anyone that's tentative about this line. Ion Kutalaba, he was a guy, because he painted himself like the Incredible Hulk, he got a bunch of hype that he didn't necessarily deserve, and he's a super dangerous guy on the feet. And once he had this submission, maybe he had to work on his defense a little, and we've seen a different Kutalaba come back since then. Krylov,
actually left the UFC after this, went into another organization and came back.
And lost.
And you were like, Krylov's not as good as everyone's giving him credit for, like, back then.
Right.
So then it's like we see him lose two times to Volkan Oezdemir, so it sets off a hype train for a guy that we still don't know is necessarily deserving of a hype train.
True.
And then Glover Teixeira, who we don't even know if he should be in the UFC anymore. So, okay, so he loses to those two guys, and then he comes back and beats Patrick Mustache Cummings. Like, not just Patrick Cummings, but Patrick Cummings with a mustache. So, if you're having any nerves about Serkanov, in my opinion, I think you shuffle those nerves away. Johnny Walker will beat Patrick Cummings and Mitya Serkanov inside of one round, in my opinion. So, that's just where I leave you with that. I think you put Walker on a lot of cards. I think you'll be on the winning card of the night.
I agree with that, even though there's going to be a lot of exposure amongst everyone on DraftKings. It's one of those staples that if he finishes, it's dramatic quickly and over 100 points.
And one more thing, the reason I hyped up that card so that fight so much is that this could be a co-main on a, you know, blah, 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 is this next fight, the headliner of the prelims, this could be, I almost would get a pay-per-view for this. And
this
I don't
could
know
be a co-main
just
event of a pay-per-view, but this fight, or this could fill out an ESPN Plus card easily, this main event.
Golly, what a good fight. And I don't know if it's just for the hardcores, if I'm just being naive.
No, this is a
even take out Zabi out of it. Little Heathen's a motherfucker. Who the fuck is Little Heathen?
Like, maybe you have a little remembrance when he came to Orlando over a year ago and knocked out Emmett, who still hasn't fought in since then.
I'm going to say this. That was an illegal shot. And I don't know if he was winning that fight until that moment. I'm just remembering that right this second.
It was brutal. I remember the crowds booing because they thought it was illegal. But we have a 145-pound bout with Little Heathen Stevens versus Zabit Magomed Sharipov. The Dagestani standout has come in and been favorited every single one of the fights he's ever been in the UFC, being 16-1. He's beat Brandis Davis on a knee bar the same night Aljo did. Beat Bochniak decision and Sirmion Mirayev submission. Everybody's been on this hype train. The spinning Dagestani monk. He comes in with high output, good gas tank.
Wait,
spins for days.
You pointed out a really great video to me talking about him. Tell our audience about it.
It was brought to me by Alpaca Thesaurus, I gotta say, but I can't remember the names. It's like Molly Whopper.
It's exact, yeah. Molly Wop.
Molly Wop on YouTube. 25-minute breakdown of the history of Dagestan and the actual training camp that Zabit comes out of, as much as the King of Kung Fu as well.
Molly Whoppery.
It's a great one. You'll find it on there. Look up Zabit.
Or go to Alpaca Thesaurus if you're not already following, which
definitely
is ridiculous.
A good view. Always got to be. Which he hasn't been posting much lately, has he? Come on, Alpaca, what's going on, buddy?
I know. I wish we could help assist or do something for Alpaca.
Agreed, agreed. I'm sure he has a real life and real other issues to deal with.
Like our real life.
I wish I had this. Here. Wish I had a breakdown in lifestyle.
It's cold in the rest of the country. Geckos get like, I actually had to get a gecko out of my screen today because it almost hung itself in the screen because my cat scared it to death.
Are geckos and newts the same thing?
I don't think so.
He's a newt, by the way. Motherfucking
you'd have to ask your old lady. She's the animal expert.
So, Zabit.
She texts you right now. Blink, no.
No.
They're not.
They're different. Zabit, the Dagestani, again, just to stand out, he is a huge favorite for a reason against Jeremy Stevens, who's 28-15, coming off of a loss to Jose Aldo. Stevens has tons of power, good wrestling, or reverse wrestling to keep it where he wants. He is a AKA fighter with tons of cardio as well, tons of power in that right hand. Dominic Cruz is one of his number one training partners and mentors, and this is something that I've seen a lot of people giving Jeremy Stevens heat from earlier this week. He had an interview talking about how he was suicidal after his loss to Jose Aldo. And how he was ready to leave his wife, kids, and everything and just go jump ship. And luckily, because of his coach and mentors, he got into a life
treatment, some sort of mental treatment facility where it's not just a four-day program. It's like 365 days, get you on this right state of mind, and he's working positively towards getting on there. I've seen a lot of bettors automatically fade Jeremy Stephens as soon as he brought up the word suicide. And that was their direct post saying, this guy's suicidal, you can't bet him at all because it's weird. And I'm really sorry for him, but to me, I heard is, this guy had an issue and took care of it. That's what you want to hear. This guy, instead of just not dealing with it and going to training camp, he's looking at professionals to try to extend his career and doing everything smart. So I actually see it as a positive instead of a negative. It sucks that he had that in his life.
I feel like if you're suicidal and are willing to go in there and do anything, not that. Watch out I'm for. Not even, I feel like, yeah, you I, agree, die in there. I agree with you though, everywhere. If you're like man enough, and I don't even mean to use man against like fight the patriarchy. If you're manning up enough to take care of your responsibility and you see a problem in any facet of your life and then you take care of that, I think that's amazing. If you were being less of a husband and less of a father and you went and are seeking some kind of help, and it's not lazy help, it's actually 365 day a year, like you have to go to meetings, you have to talk to people, you have to have sponsors,
exactly.
I'm all for it, and I love Jeremy Stephens, but I love all UFC fighters, and I don't think this is a problem. I think what's happening now with all athletes is we're just shoveling off like, this is head trauma. Did anyone else grow up in the year of goth? Everyone, you could know suicidal people that didn't have head trauma.
Totally.
Like, please let's stop acting like these fighters are any different than the rest of the walk of life. Like, there's other people dealing with mental issues that didn't get hit in the head all the time. So, you know, just don't negate it as that all the time. Like, oh, this is just head trauma. That's it. This is just because he's been... No, sometimes this is what people put their whole life into. You might be... roof builder, and you build a shitty roof and be like, what else am I gonna do if I can't build a good roof? I've been trying to do this for fucking 20 years and I build shitty roofs. I'm gonna kill myself.
You're gonna contemplate
come on. So give him a little breathing room.
Definitely. But Stevens comes in there with all sorts of accolades, and I just don't see the automatic minus 245 advantage here for Zabit. I feel like Jeremy Stephens laid it on himself in that exact same interview. He's like, I'm not worried about telling you what I'm going to do. Zabit doesn't hit hard, and he can start to slow down and get looping later on as the fight goes on. Jeremy Stephens is a black belt in cardio. Jeremy Stephens has talked about tightening on all that up, and he's fighting the best of the best. Jeremy Stephens isn't fighting a Bochniak in there, which nothing against Bochniak, but there's...
Or Brandon Davis.
There's levels to this game, and Stephens is a higher level by far. What I am... Still gonna pick Zabit here as a decision, but that might change before the week's out. I have been talking myself out of picking Jeremy Stephens here because the line is so off, but I think the line's wrong. I think this should be a much closer fight. And in the third round, if there's people that are more likely to finish, I see Little Heathen being the likelier, more dangerous fighter as the fight goes on. So I am actually gonna play Zabit here as a decision, but as far as DraftKings for $7,300 on Stevens and an underdog, I'm going to say underdog or pass. It's a dog or pass situation here as far as DraftKings-wise. I'm not going to be betting $8,900 for Zabit. I am going to be playing Jeremy Stevens, even though I have him losing.
What's Zabit's average amount of points?
123.5.
Because he just throws punches. He has a lot of takedowns. He has a lot of submission attempts. He's like, he is a point factory. But I freaking got to agree with you. This is going to decision, this fight. There is no way you can tell me that Kyle Bochniak can take as many punches as he took from Zabit, and Zabit has power. So I got to take power off the table for Zabit. It's not power here. Zabit's a guy that beat you by 1,000 cuts. He's a guy that technicians you out of there, and a guy that usually wins by submission. Zabit isn't going to have the power of a Jose Aldo. And if you also remember, that was a Jeremy Stephens who always trains for 3-round fights, trying to step up and take a 5-round fight.
Nope.
Wasn't it a main event? I think it was. I think it was a weird main event of a card. And the last one that Jeremy Stephens did was, that was 6 months ago. Yep. I might be totally wrong. I think it was a 5-round, which we never see Jeremy try to do. So he didn't go out there with the same kind of aggressiveness, which got him in trouble with a guy who is uber aggressive like Jose Aldo. And you know, some of the other wins, like Josh Emmett, I just said I thought Jeremy Stevens was losing that fight against Josh Emmett until the end, and then he did break his orbital with the, you know...
Sales and fought since then.
Yeah, and he might still be hurt and never fight again.
He actually, a late breaking, this just happened earlier today, it is Josh Emmett versus a Russian fighter, but he actually posted fight news.
Oh, good.
Today. Good. It's been almost 2 years, though, from that.
The other of the last few years, like, beating Gilbert Melendez by a decision for Jeremy Stevens is just as much as beating Kyle Bochniak by decision. So I kind of, Do Hoi Choi, I thought everybody hyped him up and thought he was a really good fight. And what, you think Melendez would beat Bochniak?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so at all. I think Bochniak would actually knock out Melendez.
Wow.
I think I've never seen a good... Since I've been watching UFC, I've never gotten to see the Gilbert Melendez everybody else is high on. I have never seen that Gilbert Melendez. The best thing I know about Gil Melendez is he's friends with the Diaz brothers.
That's a good point.
So, but Doo Ho Choi, I kind of thought he was a hype train that everyone jumped on. And he's another guy that if you can stand in the ring and just get punched in the face for 15 rounds and punch somebody else in the face for 15 rounds, it doesn't say either of you have as a good chin. It says the other guy doesn't have a lot of power. So it's like the same thing, the Gilbert Melendez and that, and then the Josh Emmett, which I love Jeremy. I had Jeremy in that fight, but I think he was losing the entire fight up until he won it. The Moicano split decision, some people contest that Jeremy did win that fight, and I love Moicano, but he's kind of the same T-City brand to me, where it's a hype train I'm not willing to jump on yet. I think he's kind of he's a guy that needs to expand his game, or he's been figured out. I'm glad Jeremy's seeking help. I like everything I'm seeing from Zabit. This is by far the highest caliber fight Zabit's ever walked into. Jeremy Stevens has at least twice the amount of power as anybody else that he's gone against. Jeremy Stevens' short guy thing, he's not 5'9". And his short guy thing is going to get him submitted in the same way. I have Zabit going to decision here for kind of probably the same reasons you do. I had Jeremy all week. But the more I started to look at Jeremy's fights, like, he's weather-worn, and the guys he's beating aren't the top 10 guys in the division. Everybody sees the beat headed toward those top 10 guys right in the division. This is one of the guys you got to get through. I think the beat's going to win by decision or submission. I don't really see Jeremy winning anyway. I think he could hurt Zabit and then rush in. Ugh, little heat. This is a weird fight. I don't think everybody should go crazy and heavy on Zabit. Like,
8,900 on DraftKings for Zabit. I agree. I'm saying if there's a play for me here on DraftKings, it's Steven for 7,300. I need that. I
see him getting finished too.
I need that because I got a 94,000 player that I want to play, and I got a 96,000 player that I want to play. Hint, hint for the main event. Just saying.
And I also will say that Jeremy Stevens, if somebody can exploit Zabit's game, it's going to be Dominick Cruz. And Dominick Cruz is Jeremy Stevens', you know, boy. They're going to pick apart Zabit. Dominick Cruz is so good at analyzing a fighter. And if they find every hole, and if Jeremy Stevens can find those holes with power, like Kyle Bochniak said, he could feel that Zabit was getting faded toward the end of the fight. Well, yeah, you were a fucking punching bag. Like, he literally punched a punching bag for 15 minutes. So I don't know if it's the line swaying me. I don't know if it's the hype swaying me. I don't know if it's that dirty-ass submission that he pulled off, and then all of a sudden we see knee bars the rest of the night.
Your submission of the year, by the way.
I know. I'm going to go with Zabit here, but I'm not going to get high on it. I'm not going to get high on it. I may roll it up and mix it with a little tobacco, but I'm not going to full-on pack it in a bar.
How do you feel about a -245 favorite, though, for Zabit there as well?
I think it should be a 115.
It's inflated, right?
I think so, too. Super inflated. It's because of name.
Totally agree with that, 100%.
Which is that exact thing. It's because of name is the exact same way you're going to talk about the lines going into our next fight. In my opinion.
Starting off the pay-per-view, if you haven't liked and subscribed at Lesbo and the Bean, remember, on Twitter, you can always follow either one of us at Zoltanite, at WeakneckBaby, always at Lesbo and the Bean. On Instagram, our following's growing every day. You know, we like to put out a ton of those high-level
get, not necessarily gifts, just fan art. We got a lot of fan art there.
Fan art, we're putting it out. You can steal it. You can put it up. Maybe you'll make it your profile pic. Maybe you can support a little lesbo in the bean.
And we'll also post our final post weigh-in cards day of bouts.
I know, and people have asked us for us to get those out earlier. We can't. The UFC doesn't put them out until after everyone makes weight, and then they
right, as soon
them.
As they drop that photo, we're on it, and we hardcores. If you guys don't know, we hardcores. My Twitter is MMA. My Facebook's MMA. My Instagram's MMA. I kind of like MMA. Like, I don't make shit up.
Yeah, it's a lot of MMA. If you try to show me, unless it's an eggplant, somehow something to do with an MMA fighter, if I see dick or titties go across my screen, you're getting blocked. Unless they're in a singlet.
Good point. By the way, have you seen any of this homeless wrestler on Twitter going around?
No.
Oh, it's hilarious. I've been retweeting it. I'll end up sending it to Lesbo and the Bean.
You probably already know this because I'm like uber conspiracy. Your conspiracy as well, but you also like serial killers. So you probably, you know, John Wayne Gacy?
Of course.
Okay. You know, somebody escaped from him once?
Yes. The guy who ended up turning him in.
Who
he hit in a hammer? Yeah.
Well, no, the coolest thing I think about it, one of the guys who escaped from him was a high school wrestler, and he
it's in his movie. It's in the movie diagrams, and they say it's a wrestling, but he would bring them and be like, "Show me your wrestling moves. Come on, kid, show me your wrestling moves."
And
he was good.
And one of them, like, that saved his life.
Yeah.
He said, "My wrestling is what saved my life," but it wasn't even wrestling moves at all. It was like he tried to handcuff him, mm-hmm. and then when he turned around, but he said his full-on wrestling in the way, because John Wayne Gacy was so much bigger than him, so the way he could out-leverage him and use his body weight against him to just get out of there was like... You know,
I feel like even with that kid's wrestling, he still got hit in the head with a hammer. He still got out with a couple bruises and a handcuff on.
To get extra conspiracy, a little off track with the John Wayne Gacy, there is conspiracies you can look up about it. I don't even want to say certain politicians' names that are involved with what could have been on. There's a lot of eyewitnesses that say John Wayne Gacy worked with another person, and people that even knelt down while John Wayne Gacy was raping them, and like a whole bunch of weird stuff. Yeah, he would be like, pull you over and put his dick in your window and be like, suck my dick if you want to get off. And you're like, I'm a dude. And he's like, I know.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so, neat.
Yeah, well, but there's talks, and you can look up to extra conspiracy if you want to look up everything about, if you're a nerd like me, if you're a sicko nerd like American Psycho, and look up John Wayne Gacy. You can also look up conspiracies on John Wayne Gacy, and people think he worked in tandem with other people, and I'm not even going to say their names because we want Lesbo and the Bean to stay on YouTube.
We don't want to get demonetized anymore so than we are. The main event we go, though, the pay-per-view that you're going to have to shill out a whole $65.99. It's a pay-per-view worthwhile, and it's because you got fights starting off the pay-per-view like Cody Garbrandt versus Pedro Munhoz at 135 pounds. Garbrandt coming off of a 2-fight losing streak to the champion, TJ Dillashaw. Technically he's still the champion at 135 pounds. So, Garbrandt, some people say he got clipped. They said he was doing fine. A loss is a loss, and it's the first time we've seen him in here for a while. It's really interesting the level of caliber that it jumped to from Cody Garbrandt. Being 11-2, the alpha male prospect is a hard hitter, beat Dominick Cruz at the later stages of Dominick Cruz's career. But prior to that, the only marquee wins he had Thomas Alameda, who is really not gone anywhere, and Tyuga Mitsugatsuki, who we haven't seen fight in there for a while as well, where Pedro Munhoz, being 17-3, has only lost of late to John Dodson and is a dirty-ass split decision, beat Brett Johns, Brian Caraway as well, TKO, not long ago. But Munhoz loves to use that wrestling, striking fairly low output. He's one of the lower output guys at 135 pounds and jumps on that guillotine more than anything. Cody Garbrandt, being that American wrestler we're talking about, really doesn't shoot too many takedowns in there. He's a pro boxer, has pro boxing experience. Ask his uncle. Throws a mean jab out there. But Cody Garbrandt likes to get it done with his hands, use that wrestling in reverse to keep it standing. And Munhoz's biggest advantage is on the ground. He loves that guillotine. He loves sweeping you, getting up and around. But striking-wise, we've seen Munhoz get picked apart and T-City it in there, where he's lost all 2-3 rounds and jumps for that guillotine and has saved the fight that way. But
Munoz definitely is more than likely going to get outpaced in this fight. The fact that we just haven't seen Garbrandt in there against this level of submission ace. He has the submissioner's chance here. I guess I got to coin that. No, I don't know if I've ever heard anybody else say that. But we hear puncher's chance all day. Yeah. What do we hear? Submission, guys? Submissioner's chance. He can throw that guillotine or jump over like T-City.
Weird enough, I've heard it a few times. Only in the last few months because of T-City fights. And there was just something recently that happened like 2 weeks ago. But it's sparse. I haven't heard it forever. But it needs to be something.
You listen
like
to that beat.
Yeah. Maybe it was here. It really could.
Yeah, because I've been saying it, but I don't think I've heard it anywhere. And I mix up my media.
I thought it might have been Brennan Schaub.
Oh, Brett, we know. We know B. Schaub following and listening and watching. We know. That conspiracy could. Theory, Lat B Schaub listening. Look at Google that. See how true that is. But I just feel like the lines are off here. Even though I'm picking Garbrandt decision, I feel like you got to be a little careful here. I think the line is a bit inflated. I'd like to see him more at like a minus 145 for Garbrandt. I do think he should eke this out. Do see a decision here. He picks him apart. Finish? I don't know. Munoz is, even though he eats a lot of shots, he's tough as nails in there. So Garbrandt's got a ton of power, but this is going to be a slower paced fight. I don't think I expose myself too much on DraftKings either way. Who do you have in this fight?
I see it being a really fast paced fight. I think it's going to be crazy. And I just think the way Garbrandt, unless he's been seeing a shrink for this whole amount of time, his ego is just not set for what's happening to him in the UFC right now. Some people say Dillashaw was overhyped and just got beat by a 125er. And Cody got handled by TJ for his whole last fight, handled every inch of it. The fight before that, he was doing really well in round one and hurt TJ right at the end of the fight. And TJ came back and caught him with that head kick and then set up for everything else. And Cody never looked the same. And then when you look at everyone else, yeah, he beat Dom Cruz and handled Tom Cruise. Dom Cruise. And everyone's like, oh my God, I never seen Dominic look like that. Well, because he's 100 years old. Yes. And he's broken everywhere. So that led for the hype train to start the Garbrandt that's leading to these weird inflated lines now. Then he beat, Mizugaki, and before that, yeah, he had a lot of brutal knockouts. He was coming in. Everyone likes the way the kid looks. Munoz hasn't been finished since I've been watching the UFC. I've picked him almost every time, and I've never lost with voting for Munoz yet. I think he's gone in against dirty fighters. Brett Johns is a dirty, grimy guy, and going to decision with him, like, I think he's a guy that he might be able to put. I know he could take Garbrandt's punches enough and then put on a grind that he could out cardio Garbrandt by the end and eke out the last round. Brian Caraway, he's, you know, finished Brian Caraway, and that might be the end of Brian Caraway, who I just gave shit to a few fights before. True. So it's like, I don't want to give too much credence in that for Munoz. The split decision loss to John Dotson. That's John Dotson. He's weird. What did you chase him around the ring the whole time? And he did. But beating Rob Font, that was a good fight to me. Rob Font is kind of similar to Garbrandt, where I think he could pick him apart on the feet the whole time and then just get what he got submitted right.
Submit right, yep.
So I know this is weird, but I just think Cody's going to go out and his adrenaline's going to spike too hard. He's going to punch himself out in a little bit. I don't ever see Cody having a super bad cardio. He just comes from one of my least favorite camps right now, which is Alpha Male. So it's like putting everything against Cody. I'm going to pick Munoz decision here. I think the line is way off. I do think Cody should be a favorite just because of the names he's been in against, but I don't know if it's caliber.
And former champion as well. Yes. That gives
two
it
former
credence.
Champions. Like,
well,
TJ,
no, he
and,
was a
oh,
former.
And he, yeah.
He was a former yeah. champion. He beat Cruz for
yeah.
me.
He beat Cruz, but Cruz, if you really, like, if I want to split hairs, Cruz shouldn't have beat TJ the first fight. Like,
and
that decision was
stylistically, that match in that camp knew how to beat Cruz. Years.
Yeah, they should have. Yeah, right. It's like we've had enough times at it, and we just finally have a faster body to implement what we've all learned in there. So I'm gonna go with Munoz decision. I think this is gonna be a really fast fight the first two rounds, and then it's gonna slow up. I don't know if Cody can get submitted or not. I don't know if that is necessarily going to happen. And if I'm alpha male, I got to be smart enough then to trade against that. So it's going to have to be a surprise submission. So maybe you're right. I think Cody could eke out the decision here. I don't see a finish. Either way, right now I have Garbrandt decision, but I don't see a finish happening. If I do see a finish, I like your submissioner's chance. I see a flash submission toward the end.
Which might be a prop bet if you want to put a bet on Munoz. That one might be a little hard to get money on. But as far as DraftKings, Cody Garbrandt, $8,500 against $7,700 for Munoz. As I was saying, I'm not going to put Garbrandt in many spots. If anything, on DraftKings, if I expose myself to a fighter, it'll probably be Munoz.
I'm going back to Munoz decision. If he can land a body kick on Garbrandt, that's going to slow him up. I actually thought Cody had taken a year off. It seems like it's been forever since we've seen him. I don't know if he has his head right yet. Like, he's at a weird camp. He has his new kid. He has his new whatever. The guy that literally just schooled him in two fights just got murked by Cejudo. I think Paul Munoz is a good underdog to pick here. I'm going to go with Munoz decision.
underdog. Big one. I like it. I don't think it's unfounded. I don't think you should be so worried. I can't take that big of a risk, but I don't think that it's crazy. I mean, the line is too much. The line's wrong.
If a guy's a KO artist and the other guy's never been KO'd, that really says a lot to me. Like, it just is like, oh, well, I don't know if you're going to finish Paul here.
Definitely. Pedro has a chance. So we move on to the 115-pounders where we have a strawweight bout with Tisha, the Tiny Tornado.
He shouldn't be on the main card.
Against Li Zhiliang, I'm honestly going to disagree.
Really?
I think that Li Zhiliang has looked awesome in there. One of the top China prospects. I'm not saying anything crazy. A lot of fans know. She's looked really good on an 18-1 winning streak. I do think she's on those Chinese supplements. She's got those Chinese vitamins.
You think this is better than Jeremy Stephens that beat?
No, but that is the main...
You think it's better than Surganov Johnny Walker? I just think this shouldn't be on the main card.
Zabit Stevens is the headliner for the preliminaries. That's why I think that's okay where it's at. Because it is profiled in its own sense. But Tisha Torres...
Stamen versus... what's his face down there? I think that could be... I don't know. It's alright. Hey, how can you put some on a main card that the girl's coming off a 2-loss? Like, I just...
2 losses
there,
in a row?
There has to be something that means something to me on the main card of a pay-per-view. Have a girl... Yeah, I want winners. I want winners. I want people that are all moving forward. I don't want somebody that's placeholding. Not anything against Tisha Torres. I friggin' love the Tiny Tornado so much. I just don't think she's main card. But if you're trying to build up Zhang, okay.
She has headline, though, against Andrade and Janjacek, the 10-3 fighter. Tisha Torres has only had 3 losses ever, and it was to the number 1 and 2, or I guess that makes her 4 and 5-ish area, because Andrade is knocking on the door for that title, and JJ, one of the longest tenured champions. It's a testament to Tisha's fight style, and that's keep you where she wants to fight, which is off of the ground, so she can try to point fight you. She doesn't have tons of power, and she is more than happy that staying on the outside and trying to land more significant strikes than you. Her cardio's is worked up. She's been training with Pennington all day, every day. And I don't know if she's been at top team as of late. I know that they switch around between top team and, Colorado, but I do know that her and her partner live this MMA lifestyle, and I've been watching training.
I think
on
you're
Tisha.
Right. It's Colorado. I don't think they've been at top team for years.
For a little bit, right? Yeah. But
when we see them, I think it's their homegirls going to visit them in Colorado.
That makes sense to me as well. What I've been seeing of Tornado is we're gonna see a lot of what we usually see in there, and it's that point fighting against Jing, who her last win against Daniel Taylor, who is a notoriously hard fight, and Jessica Aguilar, submission round, I don't know the round, but 2 months ago she submitted her in China, I believe. I think I was watching that.
She beat Aguilar? You're right. She deserves to be on the main card.
Yeah. That roided up lady, our 38-year-old lady. Zhang ended up getting it to the ground, and her submissions are good. Her striking, she throws a hard right kick, but we've seen her start to slow down later in fights. She usually does most of her best work in the earlier rounds, but she has a solid ground game as well. I just feel like she's going to pop for steroids. I just don't see how she's not on steroids. 100%.
She just has those Holly Holm shoulders.
For a Chinese fighter, guys barely look like that in China, let alone freaking
she could be. I'm not saying
that. Oh, transgender.
She got that gorilla clit. I'm just
if there's somebody who knows how to deal with that, isn't it Altisha Torres?
Why?
Just saying.
She looks like she's been rubbed up on since she was 13.
She gets rubbed on nonstop, and she has like 83% takedown defense, only being taken down by the highest of elite. And I feel like striking wise,
only being taken down by Rocky Pennington.
Higher weight class, just throwing that out there. Higher weight class. But I feel like the later this fight goes on, it's going to be up to the round two or three. I think Zhang wins the first round, maybe even gets her down once. But I think Zhang gasses trying to take Tisha down that first round and realizes that in the second or third she won't be able to, and then she's going to lose a striking bout. I got another motherfucking underdog. Give me the tiny tornado. Decision. Make it a dirty split. Get dirty, old split.
I don't even understand how Zhang's the favorite here at all. I just am like, are people building hype trains because she is the finish? And are they just really looking at wins and losses and that's it? They're not even paying attention at all to the caliber of the people they've gone against? Yeah. In my opinion, Zhang's best performance was that she handled Danielle Taylor. And Danielle Taylor is just constant pressure. She throws a lot of punches. They might not land. There's no power behind him after the second round anymore. We've seen in her UFC career, she's playing like, and she's really
small. Split decision fighter.
So, yeah, Zhang did that. The submission of Jessica Aguilar, we were debating on whether Aguilar should even be in the UFC anymore. It's like because of the 115 division, she's still there, but her game's not progressing at all. She's not changing. She's not evolving. So you're handling her. Yeah, cool. You got a submission. I think Tisha Torres has great takedown defense. I think she has great wrestling. Her hardest part is going to be getting in the inside of Zhang, getting her punches to land, because she's going to just lose inches in. Well, I guess her reach advantage isn't that much less, but I just think even with her height, I always just think she has to take those extra two steps forward to get her punches, which make them so telegraphed. I don't see her really hurting Zhang at all in the first round. It's going to be based on points where I do think Zhang can hurt her, but I don't think Tisha can get finished. So I like Tisha's cardio a lot better, especially coming from Colorado. Especially coming from Colorado, being like a little wrestler like she is, training with a bigger fighter like she is. I think this is almost, I can't believe how wrong the lines are, and I can't believe Tisha Torres isn't a favorite here. Like, come on, hardcores. We have no weight in these lines. I think you get in on Tisha while you can get in on Tisha before everyone starts to realize what's going on. I think she finishes the decision as well.
I think it's a coin flip by betting by fight day. So right now, the fact that we have underdog money on Tisha, we need a couple.
I think by round two, Tisha's going to be getting the takedowns. I can see her going in with a single leg, coming in with hand across the hip and just walking her backward and taking her right down.
I don't think so. I think she stays away. But as I'm saying, I think Zhang wins the first. I think Tisha takes over the last two. Either way, if you're playing this underdog, it's going to be a sweat. This isn't going to be an easy underdog to pick, but it is an underdog that is live. And as you're saying, the line's off here. This is going to be a coin flip. Get money on Tisha while you can right now. You know Lesbo and the Bean is.
And I have to say one other thing about it. I do think where I do agree with you about it being on the main card, this isn't going to be a boring fight. It's actually, there's going to be a lot of punches laid. It's going to be very active. And I think for any Johnny Bone comes latelys that are going to be jumping on just to watch Johnny Bones fight again, this will be an entertaining woman fight where they're like, look at these two little ladies. What are they going to do? Oh, shit.
This is what we want to see in fights.
Yeah.
Fighters moving forward. 8,300 for the favorite, minus 145 favorite, Zhang against 7,900.
It's a huge step up for Zhang.
Huge, right?
Huge. That's exactly. It's almost disrespectful.
That's why I'm going to be not disrespecting the line. Plus money, Tisha Torres, let's go. She just came off of two essential title contenders in there. The line is off, but for 8,300, both of these fighters put out a good amount of points. I could see mixing up either one of these fighters. 8-3 for Zhang having an average of 100 points, even though she got a finish over a Warren fighter. I guess the more favored play on DraftKings for me is going to be Tecia Torres. Maybe Zhang a bit. Probably not
Zhang. I'm not putting Zhang nowhere. I don't think Tisha's getting finished.
I agree with that. Then we go to another amazing...
finishes only. That would be my shirt.
That's a good one. One of the most touted debuts, prospected debuts for years to come. Dana White at one point in time saying, Ben Askren will never fight in the UFC. Because Ben Askren was the only fighter outside of the UFC who talked shit to Dana on Twitter in 2008, 2009.
And he is the very first in the history traded fighter to the UFC.
Really? It was a trade?
It was a trade. Mighty Mouse for Askren.
Interesting.
Very first traded fight in the history of all mixed martial arts.
Ben Askren is a money maker. We've been talking about him for a while here. We knew that he was eventually going to come aboard, and he has a tough test against Robbie Lawler. A lot of people don't see it being a tough test, but I don't necessarily agree. The debut fighter has fought level competition in Bellator and won championship-ish, but I would put Robbie Lawler against any one of Ben Askren's previous opponents. I would bet Robbie Lawler in that fight. So, this is, as we were saying with Zhang, unbelievable step up. And the fact that Ben Askren is a minus 270 favorite here is unbelievable to me. Robbie Lawler is a former champion. And the reason they're saying that is because with Ben Askren, national champion wrestler, changed literally folk style wrestling. If you watch anybody under 152 pounds or even higher, funk style now, which when I was in high school, there was two guys doing it. Ben Askren was one of them because that's when he was making his run for nationals back in 05. And there was one guy on our team that was mimicking Ben Askren, and he actually made it to the state finals using that funk style because it really is just... people don't get themselves in those type of positions. And T. Wood himself has been long-time training partner with Askren and said he doesn't want to fight Askren. They've already figured it out because Pettis and everyone else says at that Rufus Sport team, Askren is a different level, and you can see it collegiately for him. If you want to watch the best breakdown, which Askren is actually verified and said, this guy is in my head, this guy knows what I'm doing, BJJ Scout breakdown study on Ben Askren, 3 points and ground control. Ben Askren's like, this guy knows what I'm doing. And I don't care that he's telling people because this is so advanced that they're still 10 years behind. And it's true. It's just the way that he enters, switches the grip, and gets it down. He puts 3 points of high pressure on you. Doesn't go for the submission. He's more of a position over submission. Does throw a lot of strikes, but they're non-committal. They're more point strikes. So he can boost the score. We've never seen Ben Askren in DraftKings, but to me, he has everything of being a high scorer with the amount of takedowns he pursues constantly, and then the rabbit punches he throws from every angle. He, though, doesn't have to worry about submissions specifically in this fight, because Lawler likes to sprawl and brawl. He wants to keep it standing, throw heavy knees, throw heavy punches, use his cardio into the third round to keep the fight where he wants to, and wear through that. We have seen, though, Robbie Lawler leave it in the cage. We have seen bits of his life, Roy McDonald, tons of other professional fights where he's just not the same guy. And as far as this test goes, I just, again, feel like the lines are super off. I see Askren winning the first, second round. Robbie Lawler always has a puncher's chance, a near's chance. And even though Askren on the ground has a humongous advantage, they start neutral every single round. And that gives Robbie Lawler one knee, one uppercut to be able to finish Ben Askren. And it can happen. Anything can happen. I just don't think you can ever put this much money on a debut fighter, regardless of caliber, outside of the UFC against a former champion who still is dangerous on every facet of the game. I'm going to side with Askren decision here, but I'm going to be putting bets on Robbie Lawler inside the distance, even outside the distance. I just think it's disrespectful completely. I'm siding with Askren here, but the line's off. I don't know how I necessarily play this. How do you feel right now for this fight?
I disagree with you. I feel like Robbie Lawler should have hit the dusty trail years ago. He shouldn't have come back after the Rory McDonald fight. And I'm going to walk through his last fights. He beat Carlos Condit, who should have been out with him. They could have held hands and skipped down the yellow brick road of retirement together, as far as I'm concerned. Tyron Woodley handled him like he should have. He shouldn't have had the belt back to begin with. Donald Cerrone, went to decision with Donald, who was, I think it was his second fight in the 155. And I love Donald, but
he wasn't ready
nonetheless,
for it.
Homie. And then Rafael dos Anjos is more so just in the division at all for the name. Everyone's beating Rafael. Everyone's beating Rafael dos Anjos right now. So that doesn't mean anything to me. I think Robbie Lawler's finished everywhere. I think his grindability's out. And the number one thing that he has going against, and I could be all wrong here, but the number one thing that I think he has going against him is he trained with T. Woods. So who else knows everything about him other than T. Woods? Aren't they all Florida guys? Weren't they all training at Top Team at one time before that fight?
T. Woods was in Florida.
Who could take Robbie Lawler's little game plan and bring it right to his bestie? And he couldn't share it with his bestie while his bestie was over at one, or maybe he shared it all with his bestie and his bestie helped him train for it already. So they already have that Robbie Lawler game plan. I just think Askren's been training with Woods to come in here. I think when I was teasing about the all Jackson Wink, no Jackson Wink before, the really what I think you, and Chito Vera was Jackson Wink, wasn't he?
Yes.
And that's why I was going to even, but really what I think you go with is you do you think the besties are going to win or do you think the besties aren't going to win? And I think the besties are going to win and I think it's pretty comfortable. I don't know how many points he's going to land because I don't know if it's just going to be like, I'm going to get you down and hold you there. Am I going to get you down and lay points that they consider significant strikes? Because we see DraftKings rip us off a lot where they don't count all the elbows or don't count all the point fighting unless it's a lady fight. With guys, they really want it to be significant to count it. So I'm a little nervous about just throwing it all on the Askren bandwagon because I also want to stick with what I know. And even though I know a lot about him, not in the UFC. But I have been I would even say this, I'm going to use one of your lines. This is less to do with Ben Askren and more to do with a fade on Robbie Lawler. In my opinion, homeboy should have been out of there years ago. I don't really want to see him in there anymore. It just gets more and more uncomfortable for me every time. The whole fight is going to be figured out in the first 60 seconds if Ben gets that first takedown, and then we're done from there. I got Askren decision. I think he kind of handles all three rounds, and I hope we see Robbie hang it up, but I know we won't. So, yeah, that's where I go from here. I'm not going to play him too heavily anywhere, but I'm going to play Robbie Lawler nowhere ever again. Ever again. I don't even know who Robbie could fight that I would think he would win.
9,000 for the favorite, minus 270 favorite, Ben Askren against 7,200 for Robbie Lawler. I agree with that. I could speckle a couple of those oh shit spots with Lawler just because he does have a puncher's. He has knees and elbows and is still alive. And it's we say there's levels to this. A lot of guys stepping into debuting against Robbie Lawler is fucking three or four levels above.
Where do you think Rory McDonald's career is at these days? In my opinion, that fight almost
took for
kind
both of
fizzled them both down this, like, if Robbie went over to Bellator, he might be wearing a belt.
That's a good point. So, anything left with that fight? It's essentially the co-main event because we have two championship belt bouts.
But you are so right where you can't go heavy on Ben like everyone's telling you to. Because where have we seen him? Who have we seen him go against? The only thing we really know is that he's training with T. Woods. He's training with the best guy in the division most of the time. And that has got to speak, you know.
I totally agree. Totally agree. And T. Woods himself is like, we figured it out where we don't have to fight. Who doesn't want to fight who there? Is it T. Woods doesn't want to fight Ben or Ben doesn't want to fight T. Woods? In the co-main event, the belt fight, we have 170-pound contender in Kamaru. You gotta trust us, man, here at Lat B. He was on our wall with Shevchenko. That came to fruition. And since then, we might have fallen off a little bit of the wagon because in a murderer's row division at 170 pounds, it's just, we want Kamaru to win this fight, but Colby was the rightful heir to this bout. I don't know why they didn't do it. I don't care anymore. This is the fight we have. Why.
So this I'm looking at you, Ali Abdelaziz. I'm looking at you.
So this is the fight we have. So this is what we got to break down. And T-Wood being a 19-3-1 fighter, I mean, perennial champion. He's won his last five in a row. The only decision that was overturned was... Or he had a draw over Thompson in there, but last beating Damian Maya.
He should be in talks for pound at this point, and it's of bullshit that he's not.
Oh, totally agreed.
It's pure fan hatred that he's not.
There's a Dana White hatred as well.
Yeah.
But it's also because T-Wood has always tried to make his product outside of the UFC with his rap career.
I don't think so. I think it's because he does the smartest fights that aren't necessarily fan-friendly. Like, each one of the people that he's fought have been the master of their craft. So he's almost had to move his game to be each one of these different kinds of craftsmen. And that's not... It's been a long time since we've seen another champion have to do what T. Woods has done in the 170 division.
Totally agreed. At 36 years old, he's definitely adapted his style to be all of the best of the best. Been fighting nothing but contenders for multiple years now. And we know what we get. Amazing wrestling, especially that takedown defense, and overhand right that is quick and looping at times, but it doesn't matter because he slings it, and he has power in that right hand into the fifth round. T. Woods has got a solid chin on him as well. Only time he's ever been knocked out is against Nate Marquardt in Portland. I was there. It was awesome. Nate Marquardt put it on him. Nate Marquardt tired him out with the wrestling in the first couple rounds and then pushed him up against the fence and landed some elbows. Not saying that the juice wasn't loose for Marquardt, but he did have a little extra. But there's avenues to beat T-Woods, and especially now, I feel like if there's a fighter who's on his tenure part, still fighting at the highest level, it's T-Woods. I'm not saying he's obviously still peaking, but there's a time when he's going to have to start going down. And at 36 years old, I don't care who you are, especially in a long fight, collegiate wrestling, national wrestler, fighter, he's got to be feeling it on his body. He's had multiple surgeries. He's one of these guys that I constantly, after every fight, has a surgery. Am I wrong with that? He's always...
No, pretty close.
He's always got something going on. And against Usman...
Thumb surgery, like weird little...
Shoulder, yeah. Multiple shoulder at his knee, maybe one of his knees. But a good body kick in there for T-Wood. He'll throw it in there. He mixes it up all the way around. But what he really keeps people at distance with is that right hand. Kamaru Usman has been a constant wrestler. That grind is alive. Amazing gas tank. Tons of pressure. He goes over position over submission and is okay with just outpacing you in there. Non-stop, the 14-1 fighter had only ever was decision in his first fight ever and has since come on a 13 or 14 fight winning streak. We know what Usman does in there. He grinds that clit all over you until you can't take it anymore. But a win is a win is a win is a win. You will not divide us. Kamaru Usman is definitely got a good pace on him and smart. He's fighting out of armory.
Rudy.
He's got Luke A in there in his corner. Definitely a top contender. But if there was an advantage in the fight at all, it's not the power and it's not necessarily the wrestling, but it is the gas tank. I do feel like out of both of these fighters, T. Woods slows down a bit more, but he's, again, as you're saying, he's catered his fight style to that, where he's willing to sit back John Dodson-esque and wait for that right hand, where I feel like Kamaru Usman has always kept that pressure game where he pushes you up to the fence so you can't throw any of that bullshit and just, you want to use that takedown defense, he chains takedowns nonstop, and it adds up the second, third, and fourth round. The fact that the line is a 2-1, -185 for T-Wood against Kamaru Usman's +145, I feel like this is also a closer split-up fight. I'm telling you, there's money to be made on this night, and there's reasons for that. I'm fading T-Wood a bit here, as much as you gotta trust us. And Latby saw something a long time ago that I got away from. The media, the hype, everything else got to me. I got to take that all away and see a wrestler versus a wrestler in here. You get two fighters like this in, and it turns into a decision. And in a decision, this is a coin flip of a fight. That means that this is one or two takedowns from a championship fight. I'm going to have the underdog here. You got to trust the Bean. Or not. I'm going with an underdog. I know it's scary. But here we go. Give me the underdog in Kamaru.
Whoa.
Who do you have in this fight?
That is a really big deal.
I am going the other way.
Woo! I don't blame you.
I'm going the other way because T. Woods, one thing that he has experience in is 5-round fights. We know he's not going to blow his adrenaline before he gets there. And we know everybody talks shit about T. Woods' cardio, yet he wins 5-round fights, including the 5th round of a lot of the fights. He goes in against point fighters like Stephen Thompson and still handles it and wins by the closest of decisions. If this is another close decision, you're the one who always says you have to beat the champ to be the champ.
I almost said
and
that, too.
It isn't just going to be separated by a takedown, because this isn't just a wrestling match. This is MMA, and in MMA, striking matters. And if you want to boil down striking alone, if their wrestling negates each other and their cardio is close, then striking is going to be the separator. And I think T. Woods has far better hands. The thing I haven't liked about Kamaru Usman for a very long time is he just has sloppy punches. He seems like he whips out his arms instead of put power behind him. There's something really ugly about his punching style, and if that wants to be exploited, it's going to be exploited by T. Woods. Then if we're also worried about Kamaru Usman's wrestling, I wish we only could have T. Woods train with the best wrestler in the division. I wonder who that would be. Oh, you mean Ben Askren? That's been happening, and it's been happening for a long time. T. Woods has been pushed out of his comfort zone for almost 3 years now. We haven't gotten to see him with anyone. He just keeps fighting these specialists. I think Kamaru Usman is actually getting more well-rounded as the fights go on. I think Kamaru Usman is a specialist in the wrestling. So we are seeing T. Woods fight another specialist again with a wrestler. I just think he has that kind of covered. I don't know if he's better on the wrestling like he says, but I think he's strong enough and he can get out of those. And he is a smart fighter. We're on the same way that you'll be yelling at the screen, elbow on your way out, punch on your way out, kick on your way out, and he does that every time. T. Woods always has something nasty on the way out. He's just, it almost seems like he is his, he, if it is chess with the highest amount of circumstances, he is playing at the best, in my opinion. He is a John Jones in the 170, and no one's giving Tyron Woodley credit for it. I think he handled Usman. I don't think it's going to be an embarrassing thing like it was for Till. I actually think the right fight for Usman was Darren Till.
Yep.
And that'll be the fight after he loses to T. Woods. He should be fighting Darren Till next after Darren Till. He has a fight against somebody weird. Masvidal. Weird fight right now. But I'm going to say this, and I could almost put money on it. We're going to see Kamaru Usman again versus T. Woods before T. Woods is out of there. I don't fade him yet. I just think he plays it so well, and he hasn't taken a lot of damage in a lot of years.
True.
That he might step out if Ben crawls his way up the division. And I don't know if Ben versus Marty would be the next fight, Kamaru Usman. I still love Kamaru Usman. I still think he's going to wear a belt one day. Maybe it's fighting Colby that I liked him better against because Colby doesn't have T. Woods' power. And that is the number one thing that Kamaru Usman's never gone against is T. Woods' power. And nobody has takedown defense. I think T. Woods might have best takedown defense in the division there. So it's that Kamaru Usman, if you go in for a takedown and you don't get that takedown, you waste energy. We haven't seen him waste the kind of energy that T. Woods could get him to waste here. The thing that no one's talking about that I like your pick on, Kamaru Usman is so much bigger than T. Woods. So much bigger.
You remember that Orlando. Yeah.
The only reason he's in this weight class still is his youth.
Yep.
And he will move up to the 185 the older he gets. I'm just giving T. Woods still. He still's a little credit. Still a little credit. Only because Kamaru Usman still doesn't have his punching down. He still has looping punches. Once he gets those punches straight in a few more years, working with more striking coach, whatever, and because his wrestling's so good, he can continue to just focus on striking. I'm just going to give it to T Woods here, but slight favorite, slight underdog. I think the lines are pretty right on here, giving just that slight edge to the champion, to that little bit of striking power. But I think they friggin' everywhere else, they're pretty equal. This is going to be... And they're both going to get so much shit afterwards.
100%.
And they're going to be like, the most boring fighter in the UFC against the guy that gave 30%. And we're going to hear so much about it that I almost feel like it's a pop song worth like, get your Lady Gaga out of my ear with your easy pick joke garbage. It's not funny.
What's not an easy pick? Kamaru Usman, +145. Mean putting all the balls out there.
You better believe I'm going to have a parlay, though, with Usman Smith. You better believe that's a parlay.
I don't know about Smith, but I'm... We're getting there. Real quick, though, DraftKings-wise, 8,700 for the champ, Tyron Woodley, against Kamaru Usman, 7,500 on DraftKings. I think you could put either fighter anywhere.
I want to melt on the floor. I don't want to put him everywhere. You're never going to get Kamaru Usman for 7-5 ever again in your whole life.
So that's where I'm kind of like, I'm going to
put Usman. I almost think you could put them both. If they're counting reversals, this could be reverse city.
I kind of see what you're saying, though. I see it turning into snooze fest. But in that, there's a split decision. So you give me value on an underdog in a split decision type of fight? I got to take a shot. Got to give me a shot, especially with the skills we've seen.
And the way we usually see the champ wins, like when it's close, the champ wins. Maybe not here because Dana hates T. Woods so bad. I think he hates Usman too. He's like, ugh.
And Ben Askren.
But also, Dana's contract's got to be up kind of soon.
No, he still has like 3 or 4 years. He had 5 years. It was a 5-year contract he signed
for. So would you say maybe this is a dogger pass?
I would completely agree with that. What's
T. Woods' average points?
He averages 77 points against Kamaru Usman.
For 8-7, that ain't great.
Against Kamaru Usman's 107 points. Right? 7-5 in a decision win? Five rounds?
Real quick. Meek, Maya that was already handled by T Woods and already handled by Colby before you got him. True. And he was fighting every 2 months.
True.
And Meek isn't even close to the caliber of any of these guys. He shouldn't even be mentioned with him. Sergio Marias shouldn't even be mentioned with any of these guys anymore. Sean Strickland, I really like Sean, but he only went to decision with Sean. And then Rafael, you know how I feel about Rafael because we talked about him earlier. I just wanted to walk through his real quick.
Good girl.
The gnarliest victory though for T Woods is Robbie Lawler. But we don't know if that's what kind of change Robbie Law part of the like
he had that
taking of his soul.
Exactly.
But T Woods might have taken his soul. That could have been like set up by the only guy he's not the only guy, but he did beat T Woods. What's his face? The kid
Rory McDonald. Yes, he did in a point fight. Okay. Yep. But great game plan. You can actually find that breakdown on YouTube. Farazza Hobby talks about it as well. There's good stuff in there. But to the main event we go. Why we're going to pay for the pay-per-view.
If Kamaru Usman beats T Woods, GSP is going to be watching from home like, I wish I would have taken one more fight before I left and fought T Woods for 170 belt.
That's where you lose that $100. That's where the bean makes the money.
Because he's watching it from home? That doesn't mean he won't be back.
Oh, no, I think that means he's coming in.
Usman win. I come fight.
That's what I'm saying. But the reason we're at the pay-per-view, a long time reigning champ, Johnny Bones Jones, comes in at 205 pounds against Anthony Smith, the 30-year-old 31-13 fighter. He's coming off a 3-fight winning streak, only losing to Thiago Santos, in that span over a year ago. Last beat Rashad Evans, Shogun Hua, and cousin himself, Ozdemir. Johnny Bones Jones beating the likes of Daniel Cormier, Brock Lesnar, everybody else in the division, Ryan Bader.
The only other fighter besides Brock Lesnar that the UFC knows is on drugs and totally lets...
It's pulsing. I'm just saying Brock Lesnar has asthma and John Jones pulses. Nobody else pulses but John Jones, so there's a reason. It's okay. We're okay with that. Betting-wise, there's a reason that we are seeing John Jones -1,000. This is Ronda Rousey level of betting lines here. And it's because Anthony Smith moved up from 185 pounds and beat Rashad Evans, which is should have been retired years, and Hua, which we've been fading forever, and Ozdemir.
Can we just say everybody that sits at the desk, pretty much, like Bisping, Dom, Rashad, like, pretty much, if you're beating those guys, except Paul Felder.
If those are your marquee wins, there's something wrong.
Yeah.
There's something wrong. The Hua as well, and Ozdemir hasn't really, we haven't seen much of him other than unique fights with Chini fighters, where he's looked good, and Anthony has Muay Thai to the gills, 6'5", super big, moved up finally and has put a little run together, but it's just really hard to see other than a puncher's chance or a random knee, which John Jones has taken random knees and punches from everybody at the highest caliber, and no one's been able to really even rock John Jones. He's been showing some of the best fight IQ in the game. He performs when he needs to, regardless of what drug he has in his system. He shows up. John Jones is a performer, and that has been tested time and time again. And he innovates the sport. He is still the future of the sport. He's still doing stuff that a lot of his gym doesn't do. Even though we say Jackson Wink, this is his type of fighter, John Jones still breaks every single one of those rules and finishes everybody.
Yeah, he doesn't just dance around on the outside.
Exactly. And wait for a decision.
He's not Dotson. He's not Holly Holm. He is like literally the opposite of every other Jackson Wink fighter.
But he comes in still with that game plan where he sets it up, even with Cormier, where it says that left kick will land eventually. And that wasn't just him, but it's a tribute to his camp. And even Winklejohn on the breakdowns I've been hearing, he's like, and it's been known, John Jones, what is it? What do I want to use? Obsesses over tape. John Jones watches fighters meticulously, more so than most other people. Maybe it's a selling point, maybe not, but
he immediately started watching tape after the fight. He almost called out Anthony Smith.
Yeah, and then he's like, I'm already watching tape. Yeah. I'm already watching, which means hours worth of legendary tape. But, I mean, John Jones has a check mark everywhere. Everywhere. There's literally nowhere I see Anthony Smith, and that's why we don't have to go super heavy into it. 9,600 on DraftKings minus 1,000. What are you going to do? You can't put John Jones everywhere, but you got to sprinkle him on some.
How much is John Jones on DraftKings?
On DraftKings, he is 9,600, one of the highest
prices. That's pretty cheap for John Jones.
That's pretty true. Against somebody who's knocking out Rashad Evans.
We paid that for, like, Shevchenko. We've paid that for Cyborg.
With more than likely a finish, yeah. Right? More than likely
I don't know. You know, there's things, watching tape on John Jones. Because, you know, when I started watching tape on John Jones, and even Dan Hardy pointing out something that I saw that I was like, oh my God, where I was squealing, my wife had to come in from the other room and say, what are you watching? Is when he gets his underhook around the arm and pulls the shoulder out of joint. Yep. That is so brutal.
It's a chicken wing.
Oh my God.
It's illegal in wrestling. And Glover Teixeira had surgery after that.
You've pointed it out to me other times, but actually watching it in slow motion and watching the breakdown was, like, unbelievable to see the hyperextension of. And you think, watching it, oh, wow, they're taking a lot of that in their elbow. But if you actually move your own arm like that, you're taking it all in the shoulder. Mm-hmm. And it's some of his best, most dangerous weapons are places that I think Anthony Smith actually is the most dangerous. Pulling Anthony Smith on the inside of you like that is going to set you up for a brutal elbow. And Anthony Smith, he's one of the few guys that he just has this incredible build, like Johnny Walker, where he's super, he's just very even all the way through his body, and he actually seems like he could be stronger than John Jones. If John Jones were to grab him like that, it would be a little different. I've seen progression in every single one of his fights. I watched so many fights of Anthony Smith, I can't even believe it, and he looks like he gets better every single fight. I think he's watching tape too. I think he's a smart guy. I think he has, his face is super broad. He almost looks like, if you could have a fighter's face, he has a fighter's face. I don't see him getting finished in there as easily I actually think he could put a good fight against, everybody says it's always John Jones, DC, Gustafson, and everyone else, like the step tiered of those three guys. I actually think Anthony Smith could put a mean fight against Gus and maybe even knock him out against Gus. John Jones is just that much of a monster, that much of a different guy. I have John Jones. I have him to get a knockout in round four or even a submission in round four. But then if you look at tape of Anthony Smith, Anthony Smith might be better at BJJ than John Jones. And that's dangerous. The thing that John Jones is better at is he has his wrestling credentials and then he can use them in reverse if John Jones feels the need to be nervous at all about it, which I can't imagine. If you say something to John Jones like, I'm good at this, that's how he's going to finish you.
100% agree. So, John Jones leans into people's strength, and that's what throws everybody off nonstop. He's done it to everybody nonstop, and I totally agree. I actually have submission round number four, John Jones, because I think that's
exactly what I have.
Really?
Yeah.
We did not talk about this beforehand.
No. I think he can hurt him, but I think he's just going to be a hard guy to finish that John Jones is even going to talk about it in the presser afterward. Like, that guy, Lionheart, is a good name for him.
Yep.
And I think he's going to be a dangerous guy. I hope my hopes for Lionheart is actually that he changes camps, and we're going to see if the shape of his head is really, like, is he battle-worn enough that he's just built for fighting. He seems like he's built for fighting. He seems like he has the mindset for fighting. He just seems like a friggin' intimidating, scary guy. I think you speckle him. He's so cheap.
I agree. You speckle him, and then you put a bunch of other favorites that you like on a card. But there's no way you can't expose yourself to either one of these five rounders, both of these championship bouts. They're five rounds. You got to have some exposure of all of those.
I like what Anthony Smith said. I know John Jones is underestimating me because he keeps saying he's not. I never heard him say any of his other fights that he wasn't underestimating somebody. So I know that John Jones, and we've never seen John Jones take a fight this quick afterward.
Right.
Like, this says a lot. Like, yeah, I'll eat the next guy in the division. It really does say that he's coming in with a really big ego right now. And that also could be John Jones in a dangerous spot. Because when John Jones thinks he's going to win a fight, he ends up with a fight that could be a sketchy split that everybody else thinks Alexander won. So I'm just saying, I know it's John Jones the monster, but, you know, if you can't afford him everywhere, it might be okay.
Totally agree. So, if you're reading between the lines, look at everywhere. Remember to follow us at Zoltanite, at Weakneck Baby, at Lesbo and the Bean. Always, it's going to be a fun one. Stick around because we got more to come. You know we're going to take that plan B because it's going to get crazy.
Oh, Sunday. We are going to need a morning after. And thank you so much for listening again. We love you. And you know what? A gift? Our longest episode ever.
Lesbo and the Bean!
Thanks for listening to Let Be. For all things Lesbo and the Bean, head over to lesboandthebean.com or follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter.